It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's league fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And Fred, it is, I don't know if you call it prospect season, rookie season, but it is the time when players begin making their major league debuts, at least the ones who weren't there opening day. We got a lot of them to talk about. I think we'll probably want to start with, pick a starter. Which of all the starting prospects who have come up here lately, who do you have your eye most on? We'll talk about all of them, but who's the most sort of exciting to you?
Yeah, I guess Jose Berríos is the most exciting to me. I don't really have my eye on him because he's not available in any of my leagues, but for a lot of our listeners, he is available in their league.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's certainly the highest rated guy, and we've talked about Twins pitching prospects, and he, it appears he's got a chance to be the exception. He actually throws hard. He misses some bats. He's gotten strikeouts in the minors. What do you think is both the kind of immediate projection for him and the remainder of the year? How much do you like him over the next couple of weeks? How much do you like him for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I'm thinking kind of a long-term play with him just because I feel like the Twins need to have him in their rotation. Like, I've been kind of pushing him in some of the Twitter chats earlier this week just because when I looked around at different teams, like, they were a team that was underachieving from what they expected to do this year. And then when I look at their rotation, it was just a lot of blah, like a lot of guys who can get you a 4 ERA, but nobody who can make a really big impact. So, I mean, he could struggle and go back down to the minors, but if he doesn't, I feel like they just can't bump him even when, you know, everyone gets healthy. They just bump Tommy Malone or something like that.
Sean Manea, another guy who's been very highly thought of. He will be arriving imminently. I am not, and I can't even put my finger on why. I'm not as high on him, and haven't been even really coming out of college. I was never quite as enamored of him as a lot of people are. Do you see a high upside guy in the near term in him?
Maybe not right away. At the same time, it does look like he's here to stay as well. That was kind of the indication I felt like we got from the A's yesterday. And he does have that pitcher friendly home park, so I feel like that helps him a little bit too. Overall, like with all these pitchers, I feel like you probably pick them up in a standard league. I was kind of thinking about it this morning, and often people will ask me, like, okay, in what size of a league do you pick them up? Like, do you pick up Manea in a 10-team league, in a 12-team league, in a 15-team league? And my answer is usually kind of yes to all the above, because I feel like in any size of league, your worst player on your team, the guy who you will drop, is probably not really any better than the top few veterans on waivers. Like, it's probably about a wash. So, I mean, you pick these guys up, you give them a shot for a few starts, and then if it doesn't turn out, you can probably pick up someone similar to what you dropped in the first place.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I'm looking at all these guys, and I'm funny about pitching prospects. I tend to be pretty picky and only go with guys that I really, really like among pitching prospects. I feel like if a rookie pitcher, if a pitching prospect blows up, and it sometimes they do, if it doesn't go well, I just feel like that hurts you more than if, say, you've got Byron Buxton and he steps in and he goes whatever he went during his time before getting sent down. By the way, we'll talk about Buxton in a little while, but I tend to really only like pitching prospects who are really high upside, guys who could step in and be really good. And I think Berríos is one of those guys. He's somebody who I could see him stepping in and being really good. And so I can see getting in on that. But some of these guys I'm not as sold on. Another one, Michael Fulmer, again, a guy who was once a very highly regarded prospect. He's been talking about him for a while now. I'm not crazy about him. Again, I think your point is he's probably better than your worst guy, but and he's got an offense behind him, so that certainly helps. But are you in on Fulmer?
Yeah, and actually my point necessarily isn't that he's better than your worst guy. It's that he might be better than your worst guy, and if he's not, then you can always go back and get him, your worst guy back, basically, or someone like your worst guy. And I totally know what you mean, whereas if these young starters, you know, blow up, then they really hurt your ratios. So to be clear, like, I'm not necessarily advocating putting them in your lineup right away. I'm just advocating kind of pick them up and put them on your bench and see what they look like in their first start or two. And I was trying to think of some comparables from last season, and I mean, we tend to forget the prospects that don't work out. And it's not fair to compare any of these guys to, like, a Noah Syndergaard who just comes out. Like, he's on another level as far as what he's capable of. But I was thinking of someone like Joe Ross last year. Like, nice prospect, not at the top, you know, 10 or 15 on the pipeline prospect list or anything, but a nice prospect. And he came up and gave some pretty good ratios to fantasy owners. And, like, that's kind of my upside for these guys. So I feel like I would pick him up, stash him, and then see what happens from there.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm getting at is I just feel like at the start, I mean, again, the point you make is you don't have to start him, and I think that's the key to remember. But to actually put these guys in your lineup, I just feel like for a lot of these guys, unless you're talking about somebody like a Syndergaard, the risk-reward is kind of out of whack, and that leads me into the next guy, a guy who I think may be lower risk than some of these guys, but also probably lower reward. Aaron Blair, he came up. I actually saw him. I was there at the game he pitched in Atlanta over the weekend. And I feel like he is one of those high-floor, low-ceiling kind of guys. Like, he might be, a number three or four major league starter right now, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be a one or two. And I can see the value in that, except that the Braves don't have much of a bullpen. They don't have much of an offense, so that's going to be a problem. But, you know, he's the kind of guy I really have a hard time with because I think he's safe. I don't think the Braves are going to do anything with him. I think they want him in their line, in their rotation. And I don't think he's very likely to be bad. I just also don't see him as being likely to be exciting. And that's a harder guy for me to get a read on than some of these. What's your read on Blair?
Yeah, no, my read was the same. And I actually didn't bid on him at all in any of my 15-team leagues on Sunday because I just don't really see the upside. You know, if he got called up to pitch for the Mets or the Nationals or something like that, I'd be a little more interested. But it doesn't look like, and I'm not just going off his one start, I'm looking at his minor league numbers too, like it doesn't look like his strikeout rate's going to be really high. And then Atlanta, just like he's just not going to be supported there as far as winning games. They have won very few games as a team this year, so it's hard to see him winning a lot of games, especially if he doesn't go deep in them right away. I just felt like in an NL-only league I would pick him up, but in a mixed league, now I feel like there's no point maybe in me just dropping my Bartolo Colon, my Marco Estrada, you know, depending on your league size, for a pitcher like that, because I don't think the upside of him is really being any better than them, and then because he's young, he would be worse. Now, I wanted to throw this back to you for a second, because I was interested in your take of the three kind of higher-end guys, Fulmer, Manaea, and Barrios. Like, which one, if you were picking up one, which one would you want to pick up?
For me, that's a pretty easy call on Barrios. I like his upside the most of them. Again, I don't even have a logical reason. I'm not buying I've never been high on him. And I think that, like, I think the point you made was really good, which is that even if everybody who is hurt comes back, the Twins have to find a way to have Barrios in there. Either they are contending, and they need him to help them contend, or they're not, and there's no reason to send him back. So I definitely see him as a guy who is going to be there. And I just like, he's the one of those guys to me that kind of makes the potential reward balances out the risk of an unknown rookie starter.
Yeah, for sure. And just looking at how the pitchers, you know, have done in their minor league career and done this year, one of the other ones I wanted to mention is Michael Fulmer wasn't off. It's only three starts, but he wasn't off to a great start in AAA. So, you know, fantasy donors don't want to go overboard and pick these guys up and put them right into their lineup. I mean, he made three AAA starts this season and has a 4.11 ERA and a 1.37 WHIP. So, and we wouldn't want that from a fantasy owner, and now he's going to be facing much better players.
Yeah, I have not seen the kind of dominance from him, certainly in the high minors, that you would want to see from a guy that you were taking that risk. Again, I keep hammering this, but to me that's the issue, is that risk of what goes wrong with these guys who are unknown. So some of this stuff just doesn't play, and even hitting prospects aren't a sure thing, but they're safer. It's a clearer sort of projection. While we're still on the same topic for a good long while, one more name that you mentioned, I think is a really interesting question, is Blake Snell, who doesn't really have a job. He's sort of the exact 180 degree from Aaron Blair. He doesn't really have a job. The floor is probably really low, but the ceiling is really high. Are you holding a roster spot for Snell while we're waiting to see what sort of opportunity he gets?
Yeah, I would hold a roster spot for Snell, I'd say, over everyone we've discussed so far, except probably Barrios, because there is that value in just actually being in the majors and having a chance to help your team right now. So I'd probably drop him for Berríos, just because I feel like Berríos is, even if he's a little bit less of a prospect than Snell, but it's probably pretty close, and he's actually in the majors. With the other guys, I feel like Snell's a better prospect, so I think I would hold him in hopes of getting that like really special performance, maybe for 4 months or something, if he's in the rotation by the end of May. We don't really know when that's going to happen, but if he keeps just dominating in the minors, you know, I think it has to happen at some point in the first half.
We're not going to spend the entire show talking about starters like we did last week, but there's still a lot to talk about with starting pitchers. A personal favorite of mine, Chris Archer, looked a lot more like himself last time, but boy, there's a long run of starts with him not being himself before this last time out. My personal biases mean I am inclined to believe he's a guy who gets a little funky sometimes and then gets sorted out, so I'm inclined to believe that he got a little funky and got it sorted out. Are you with me, or you still need to see more?
I'm going to say I still need to see more. In fact, I was thinking if I was an Archer owner, maybe I would try to see if I could move him now at ace value coming off that start. I think that would at least be, to me, that would at least be worth exploring. You know, like if you spent a fourth-round pick on him, if you can convince someone now that he is a, you know, back to fourth-round pick value, then I think maybe I would try to mitigate my risk and get rid of him right now. Like it was encouraging enough that I wouldn't trade him now for seventh-round value or sixth-round value if I took him in the fourth round. But I don't know. I feel like if he, like as you said, like he had a long run dating back to late last season of inconsistent results. So I'm not totally back on board yet.
I don't know that I'm pulling the trigger, but I'm probably that guy in your league you're calling to dangle him to. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, and I mean a high strikeout starter like him, like you can trade him. Like yeah, that's the thing. Like around your league, you'll be able to find a couple owners who either are low in strikeouts in the standings or just fans of Chris Archer. Like I feel like you can find someone and get good value for him now if you're not totally back on board.
I remain puzzled by Zach Greinke, who had another bad one, has not really been good at home yet, has been very good on the road in two really good parks to pitch in, and I think that's not entirely coincidental. The thing that stands out to me, five home runs in two and three starts at home, no home runs and two starts on the road. That is certainly not entirely a coincidence, the difference between Arizona, San Diego, San Francisco. I have no idea what to do with Greinke. Again, like we've talked about it, I see him as more a two than a one, but are you looking to sell on him? Are you looking to buy on him? I'm just baffled. Do you have any more of a clue on him than I do?
Yeah, I'm definitely not looking to buy, and to compare him to Archer, I would rather buy on Archer right now. I'm kind of with you on Greinke, where I feel like he's a number two in a mixed league. Archer, I think, is a number two who's maybe a number one. I'm just not seeing anything from Greinke right now, really, to indicate he's a number one, and that's because the strikeouts aren't high. I mean, he has two starts this year where he got two strikeouts in each of those starts, and like that's just you can't be a number one. You can't be a number two, obviously, with that, or even in, but even if that improves, like the five strikeouts to start six, like it's just okay. And as you mentioned, like his only two quality starts in five starts this season at the Padres and at the Giants, and those are pitcher paradise. Like that's, I don't know. We need to see him perform well in Chase Field and more than once before we think of him as even really a number two. I think he may even get to that point, but yeah, I would rather have Archer right now.
Couple more starters before we move on. Tanner Roark remains a guy, also kind of in the puzzling category to me. He's been really inconsistent. He obviously had one just utterly brilliant start. I was talking about this with somebody recently about maybe he is actually one of those rare guys who is better as a starter than a reliever, but I know the 15 strikeouts happened, but aside from that, overall, he hasn't been that great. He's got a safe rotation spot. He's got what looks like a very good bullpen behind him. I think the Nationals are going to start scoring runs, so there are certainly things to like, but I am not buying on Roark yet except as a guy. I'm buying him as a guy. As somebody, he's my fourth or fifth starter, somebody I'm streaming, sure, but I'm not buying him as a central guy in my rotation yet. Do you like him any more than I do?
Roark's interesting because I can't figure out why we would. I can't. I guess his career strikeout rate's not high, but like if I told you there was a pitcher on waivers in your league who has a career 3.09 ERA and a 1.15 WHIP, I mean he's thrown almost 400 innings, so that's a pretty big sample size now. And even his FIP's 3.68, so it's not like he's just been crazy
right.
Lucky. And then you tell me that pitcher on top of that has got 15 strikeouts in his last start. you'd say, well, sure, sign me up. Like, I'd take him for sure. But I'm also kind of hesitant on him. The thing that makes me a little interested is just that he's on the Nats, and they're just winning a ton of games right now, and he looks like he's going to be really well supported on that team. So, like, I like him better, even if he's at a 4 ERA, than a guy's on a worse team at a 4 ERA. But I'm with you where I just can't get really excited about him. That being said, when you step back and just look at his career numbers and, you know, coming off that great start, like, it does feel like it's worth picking him up.
One last guy before we move on to other things. Rick Porcello, looking like the guy this year the Red Sox thought he was going to be. I am hesitant to wipe away an entire season, and he wasn't good last season, though he actually was pretty good the last couple months. But in a case like that where a guy is traded for the first time and gets a giant contract and is in this weird situation where that Red Sox team was really kind of baffling in a lot of ways last year, I am somewhat inclined to kind of wipe it away and say, you know what, this kind of looks like the natural progression of what he seemed to be turning into through 14. I don't know that I'm giving up a lot to get him, but I'm sure I'm open to conversations. If somebody's looking to sell high on him, I hope they call me because I'm interested.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, he was actually one of my kind of late-round guys in some of my 15-team leagues this year. And, you know, so far, and I mean, the start against the Braves, I feel like, does skew his numbers, you know, in his favor a lot because he shut them out over 6 1/3 innings, and he's not going to probably have as favorable of a matchup with him being in the American League as on the road against the Braves for the rest of the season. But if you just look at his other starts, he's getting, you know, 7, 8, 9 strikeouts per start. He's getting a lot of ground balls. Like, that's a really good recipe for success.
All right. We will continue to talk prospects, but we will talk young offensive players now. Byron Buxton sent down. He's really young, and in the long term, I really like him, but he still hasn't hit yet. If we are not talking a keeper league, are you even holding on to Buxton at this point?
Yeah, I would drop him just because I feel like the road to him helping you, especially in a mixed league, is really long right now. I did think of Rougned Odor as someone who is young and just totally struggled at the beginning of a season last year and then came up and was and then got some time in the minors and came up and was really good the rest of the way. But I feel like that's more the outlier. Like, I feel like when Buxton comes back, like, even if he's better, he has to be a lot better to help you in a mixed league. So and roster spots are valuable, especially in the first half of the year when there's a lot of options, like these young pitching prospects. Like, if you can drop him and pick up a pitching prospect who's actually in a rotation and could help you soon, I think you just have to make that move.
Yeah. You had an interesting note here about, and it was something I thought as well, but I think there's an interesting note here. You talk about, we want to talk about Michael Conforto, who I'm really high on, man. A guy just looks like a hitter. He's got a really broad base of hitting skills, which is something that I like a lot. And there is this perception, and it's because it's literally true, that Conforto hasn't faced a lot of left-handed pitching. But there's a reason for that, and I'm trying to call it up right now. And the reason is basically that the Mets haven't faced a lot of left-handed starters. And so I think that there's an opportunity here. If somebody thinks that he's still not an everyday player, Mets have faced two left-handed starters this year. They played 20 games and they faced two left-handed starters. So, yeah, Conforto's totals at bats against left-handers are very short, but it's because they haven't seen any. So it's a very long way to make a point, but I think there's a little sneaky thing here. If somebody looks at the splits and sees, oh, he's not hitting against lefties, well, he hasn't had the chance. I think he's going to play. I think Conforto is an everyday player right now, and I think he is a star everyday player. I am looking to get him if I don't already have him. What do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, my concern, actually, I kind of saw it the other way where maybe you could sell. Like, my concern is just because they have so much on their bench at the outfield, like, yeah. And Juan Lagares is okay against lefties, and, you know, are they going to use those lefty games as when they're going to be more often at some point during the season. They'll hit a stretch where they play lefties more often. And, you know, are they going to use those lefty games as a chance to play Lagares more? Because I know he's their fourth outfielder, but he's good, great defensively. I feel like they wanted to get him in the lineup a bit. It would bug me if Conforto sat against all the lefties, just not just as a fantasy owner, but I feel like for him to develop into a great hitter, which he could, he has to play against lefties, and this is the time to do it. Like, we're early in the season. Like, I get it if it's September and he struggles against lefties all year and, you know, you're in a race, but right now I feel like he has to stay in the lineup, but I'm just not totally sure that they will, just because of Legarreth and having Diaz on the bench and just wanting to get them some playing time. Like, do you think Legarreth will just then hardly play, even if they do face a lot of lefties, or could he go in for someone else? He can go in for Anderson, I guess.
I think the wedge, I don't even know. I don't think they're going to have a choice. I just like this guy's bat so much. I think he's going to hit so much. Also, look, I don't have enormous faith that everybody's going to stay healthy. I mean, that's part of it. Like, what kind of faith do you have that Granderson is going to play 150 games, that Cespedes is going to play 150 games? I think that it's a really nice problem to have, but as a lot of managers, including one I used to cover, say, those problems tend to sort themselves out. I just don't think that a healthy Conforto, I don't think they're going to have a choice, and I don't think they're going to sit him much against lefties, because I think he's going to force the issue.
Yeah, so you think he'll have more than 500 at-bats probably this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's basically an everyday player. Now, I'm that person you want to call, right? If I think that, then I'm that person you want to call, because it's not a set-in-stone thing. That's my perception, and I think there is a downside risk there. And so if you have him and you've got somebody in your league who's like me, who's all over this guy, call that person and see if you can work a deal, because there is risk there. It's not a given. That's my perception. But it's certainly not like Terry Collins has come out and said, this guy is going to play every day. The other thing that we've learned with the Mets is, even if Terry Collins came out and said he's going to play every day, that could change in a week. See the 5-versus-6-man rotation question with the Mets.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you, and that's one of the reasons I put him in our notes for this week, is just, like, to me, when I watch him play, like, he's so talented, and I just think he's someone with a lot of fantasy upside if they let him just hold, like, a really good lineup spot. You know, basically, and give him 145-plus games this year. I think he could turn out to be one of the best value picks looking back at drafts.
Staying in that same division, another guy I've been really high on in the past, but who is not really producing so far, Anthony Rendon. There are some numbers to like. He has scored 13 runs. That's not bad, but he has one RBI, no home runs, no steals. This is coming off a year when he didn't really hit for any power last year. He slugged .363, at 5 homers and 355 at-bats last year. I still like Rendon as a buy-low guy. If somebody is frustrated with him, I am getting on board. His exit velocity is quite good. There are things to like about Rendon. Are you nervous yet, or are you with me still an optimist?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous. I mean, I started thinking about him, and I thought, okay, I'll think about players with combined home runs and steals. And I thought, even with him having middle infield eligibility, like, how many, like, don't you, in a mixed league, you probably have to have more than 20 combined home runs and steals in a season to be worth a roster spot, like a lineup spot in a mixed league. I was hoping he was going to be kind of like Dustin Pedroia, like this year, where, you know, he hits double digits in homers, he hits double digits in steals, maybe he doesn't get to 20 in either, but he's, you know, somewhere in the teens in both, and he's hitting in front of Bryce Harper, so he just scores a ridiculous amount of runs. And he might score the ridiculous amount of runs, but if we get, like, 10 homers and 6 steals, like, I'm just not sure if he's really making much of an impact. And he was going in every mixed league draft, like, in the first 10 rounds, and I was seeing him sometimes in rounds, you know, 6 or 5 or something like that. And I don't know. It's a long stretch now. And last year I kind of gave him a mulligan because he was dinged up, but this year we haven't heard anything about that. So, I was just really disappointed to see him not showing any power or speed really during April.
Yeah, I mean, that the power is the thing that I am counting on. A guy's got one steal in his last 100 games, one steal in his last 445 plate appearances, and the Nationals are looking to run this year. The fact that he only has one attempt through 20 games with that team that is looking to run means to me, that's a pretty good indication you can probably take running off the table. And again, the other part of that, if he continues to hit in front of Harper, pretty good thought that he's not going to run much. So, you know, I think that's off the table. I mean, maybe he gets you 5, but I think it is reasonable to think that that's not really a consideration for a guy who stole 17. I still think there is power in there, but yeah, if you're looking to get 5th, 6th, 7th round value from him, I don't call me, but I still think he is. I like him as a buy low, I guess, is my point. I mean, he's not somebody I'm looking for, but if somebody's frustrated with him, I hope they're calling me, because I still like the player and I like the lineup spot.
Yeah, and I mean, I was hoping from him. Sometimes I also like to think about players as far as month to month, and what I was kind of, especially because we're coming to the end of the first month in a few days, and like I was kind of thinking of him as a three homer, one steal type guy a month, and that gets him to about 18 homers and six steals over the course of the season, and he scores 100 runs, and he hits, you know, 285 or 290, and then I felt like he belonged in mixed league rosters, but he's got to start picking up that power. We can't have like nine home runs and six steals, even with 100 runs. Like at that point, like it's hard to get him in a 10 or 10 team league. It's probably hard to get him in the lineup at that point. And at 12, like he's maybe in the lineup, but he's one of your weaker players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I still wouldn't be surprised to see that 3-1 fairly common over the remaining months, but I also wouldn't be shocked if that weren't the case. We move to the ninth inning because we always love to talk about the ninth inning. Houston Street on the DL with a strained oblique. I can personally attest that is an unpleasant thing to deal with. I currently have a very mild one myself. It is not keeping me from pitching, I will say, and I can't still play the piano, but it's a tricky injury. That's one of the things I always say. It's a tricky injury, but it's true because you've got to wait until it's totally clear to come back. You can't come back from that early or you're going to make it worse. So do you like Joe Smith as a must get while Street is out?
Yeah, I think you have to pick him up, especially if you're the Street owner. I mean, it's an easy place to go. I don't love Joe Smith. I think he's fine. Like, he's not – the strikeout rates the last few years is, like, just okay for a reliever. It's, like, it's not even a strikeout per inning. So I don't – like, I don't love him, but I think if you're a Street owner, like, it's where you have to go, because I also – like, this isn't like the Reds or when we were talking about the Phillies and we just couldn't really find any option that we even thought was serviceable. Like, I think he's okay. I think he should be picked up in, you know, 12-team leagues for sure, 15 for sure, like 10-team probably. Like, it depends a little bit. In 10-team leagues, you might not, depending on what your other options are. But, yeah, like you said, the oblique injury is not going to be a two-week DL strain for Street. And Street's known as someone who's not a really quick healer.
Yeah. Another guy, and this wasn't on the list, so I apologize to you for this, but there are starting to be some whispers, rumblings about Kevin Jepsen's job security. Obviously, since he's a guy, I said, oh, yeah, I like him the most of all these guys. Are you nervous on Jepsen? And if so, what's plan B there?
Yeah, I'm not nervous yet. And, I mean, yeah, I was pretty high on him and, you know, was kind of pushing people to, like, to pick him up and count on him maybe for a while, because we've both talked about how we were a little worried about Glenn Perkins. And I'm not sure, like, if they would give Trevor May a shot in the ninth inning or something. Like, a lot of people have liked Trevor May over the years. You know, he was someone I kind of thought of. Is there someone else that you think could be the option, or do you think May would be the next guy?
I think that probably makes sense. That's one of those situations where I'm definitely just going to wait and see who it is. I'm not going to be prospecting there. I'm not going to be looking to get lucky to find gold with one of those guys. When somebody gets it, if the change happens, I'll be on that. But I'm not looking to pick up somebody to sort of cover for me in case Kevin Jepsen loses the job.
Yeah, and I know relievers are fickle and they can kind of go up and down from year to year. But, I mean, last season he got 15 saves, like, between his time with the Rays and his time with the Twins. So, I mean, this is someone, and he had 2.33 ERA last year. Like, this is someone who I'm not putting him in the class of a pitcher where I'm like, oh yeah, he's a good reliever, but he can't handle the ninth inning or something like that. Like, he handled it just fine last year. So unless something's just off with him, whether he's not at 100%, whether it's mechanical, but maybe this is just small sample size, and he reels off five saves in a row in the next couple of weeks. Like, I wouldn't be looking to drop him, I think, if I picked him up.
Also, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but this does kind of tie into a point that I think we both made when we talked about Jepsen last time, which is he looks like a closer. And so when he hits a rough patch, we only start whispering about it. It's one of these guys, somebody like Jeanmar Gomez, if he had this kind of patch, at this point maybe not, but, you know, if he takes over and has a rough spot, the Phillies are probably looking for the next option because he doesn't really look like a closer. I really believe that because Jepsen is a power guy, because he sort of fits what you have in your mind about a ninth inning guy, that he gets a little more rope, and if he gets it together, he'll still be fine. If he sorts this out soon, he's fine. He gets a longer rope in the ninth, I think. I think power guys are going to get more of a rope in the ninth than guys who do it in different ways.
Yeah, and then to go back to something we were just talking about, Joe Smith, not a big power high strikeout guy. He has 5 strikeouts this year in 12 innings.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really see any other options that got me that excited out of that bullpen. So I feel like he probably has some rope, and you know, but at the same time, like the same thing I guess could happen with him if he doesn't, you know, get the first couple save chances locked in. You know, maybe they look at other options there too. I don't know, but I would definitely pick him up.
Move to injuries. Carlos Carrasco going to be out for a while. You asked about Trevor Bauer on our notes, and I have Bauer in an auto new league where I have him as a reliever, and I really like that. I kind of don't want Bauer to move to the rotation because I like him as a reliever. If he moves to the rotation, are you interested, or do you have that same skepticism that he's probably the same starter he's always been?
Yeah, I wouldn't be interested in picking him up. Like, maybe long term at some point he'll be a good starter someday, but you know, right now, I wouldn't bother picking him up. It's just so inconsistent. And going back to the very beginning of the podcast, we're talking about rookies and someone who could burn you really bad if you put them in their lineup too soon. Like, this is probably the poster child for that. Like, we don't really know how he's going to do it back as a starter, but I mean, there's a lot of evidence there that says he could have some ugly starts.
Yeah, absolutely. We go to another guy I like a lot, a guy I'm on record as liking a lot, a guy I have and was counting on big numbers for, Travis d'Arnaud, going to be out for a little while and just once again not staying healthy. A shoulder injury, a rotator cuff injury is, I think, a little scary. How worried are you about d'Arnaud?
Worried enough that I would drop him in one catcher leagues, but I'm pretty big fan of just kind of like moving pretty quickly at that position anyways in a one catcher league. But in a two catcher league, I'd probably try to hold him at least for a while and see where things are going. But yeah, in a one catcher league, I just don't see enough upside really, like, because he wasn't playing really well and now the injury, like, I think I would just move on from him. There's just so many options in those leagues. You can get Grandal on waivers, you can get Wilson Ramos on waivers, you know, Miguel Montero, and you can look at their upcoming schedules. I think I would just drop them and start cycling through those guys until I found someone I wanted to keep permanently, or just never keep someone permanently and just keep looking at upcoming schedules all the way.
In a shallow league, this is a question that you laugh at, but in deeper leagues, I think it's worth asking. We have 300 plate appearances that say Kevin Plawecki doesn't really hit in the majors, but he's a guy who came up really well-regarded for his bat. Guy that people always thought was going to hit, and now he's got basically an everyday job. Rene Rivera is not going to play. In deeper leagues, do you see a case for picking up Plawecki, or are you just not at all until he hits the major league level?
Yeah, no, I could totally see a case for picking him up, and I didn't need a catcher in any of my 15-team leagues, but so I didn't really keep track of him when the waivers processed, but my guess is that he was picked up. I mean, when you're talking about a league that uses 30 catchers, I mean, he has more upside based on his minor league numbers than some of the catchers who are active in those formats. So, yeah, no, I think you can pick him up. And the catcher position in general this year is like when I was looking at d'Arnaud and I thought, okay, in shallow leagues, like, who are the catchers who you just never take out of your lineup? Like, in those one catcher leagues, there's not very many right now who I feel like you just never take them out of your lineup. You know, Posey, McCann, you can't take Castillo out of your lineup. He's hitting so well right now, but like, you know, we lost Schwarber, Russell Martin's not playing well, Derek Norris is playing really poorly. Like, there's just a lot. Matt Wieters played really poorly, d'Arnaud was playing really poorly. Like, the catcher position hasn't been a great fantasy spot this year.
Yep. And now we move on to 2-start pitchers, and, man, what a weird mix. The pitchers I like, I hate the matchups. The matchups I like, I don't really like the pitchers. So, Bartolo Colon has really good matchups. Steven Wright has bad matchups. Brandon Finnegan, John Neese, Cashner, Carnes, Tillman, Dickey, Roark. Every one of these guys, I either don't like the pitcher or I don't like the matchups. Out of that group, who do you like?
Yeah, to me, Colon is like head and shoulders above the rest just because he's going to face the Braves and then the Padres, and he's at Petco to face the Padres. Like, I just see like so little disaster potential there. I feel like out of those 2 starts, he probably gets 1 win. You know, I don't have my sights set on 2 or anything, but he probably gets 1 win. I don't see him giving up, like, more than 4 runs in either of those starts. And, you know, maybe he holds one of them to just 1 run. I just feel like over the course of next week, he probably gets you about 10 strikeouts a win and decent ratios. To me, he's, like, the safe one of them. But you're right, like, you and I both like Neese, but he's got the Cubs and the Cardinals. And Finnegan's interesting, but, you know, he's he got the Giants, and then he's got the Brewers, and he's at home, and that's not a great park to pitch in. And, you know, Stephen Wright's been surprisingly good as a starter with the Red Sox, like not just this season, his whole career, but at the White Sox, at the Yankees is really tough. Let me throw it back to you. Like, I took Cologne. Like, are there one or two other ones that you would take out of that group? And would you go to the guy you like or the matchups you like?
Well, I think there's one where I kind of like the pitcher and kind of like the matchups, and that's Tillman. I know I've talked about what I think about Orioles pitchers, but I still like the ability there. I still think about what he's been at times. Yankees are a little rough at home. The A's are not that great. I'm not crazy about the matchups, but I don't hate them. I like the pitcher. That's probably the one guy where I don't feel bad about the matchups or the pitcher. You know, I love the matchups for Cashner. He's at home. The Mets can hit, but they're not necessarily going to light up a right-hander in San Diego, and the other one is Colorado, so I like that. But, yeah, it's just this weird mix. Like, I like Roark. We were just talking about Roark. But at Kansas City and at the Cubs is a pretty brutal combination. It's this weird matchup. But those are probably the only two guys. Maybe Carnes at Oakland I like. At Houston is a tough park, but they're not really hitting. That's probably the next one on my list where I kind of like the pitcher and the matchup. But, yeah, it's there's not really any of those that I'm really jumping on.
Yeah, Carnes is probably second for me. The A's haven't been great against righties this year, and it's a good park to pitch in. And then the Astros have the most strikeouts in baseball. So I thought even if the start at Houston isn't a great start ratio-wise, he should get a few strikeouts in that start. And I didn't mind Tillman, too. I will say that if you own Andrew Cashner and you don't start him next week, you might as well drop him. Like, if you're not going to start him in a two-start week with home starts against the Rockies and the Mets, like, it's not going to probably get any better than that for him any week this season. Like, you might as well drop him at that point. And I think I would I'm not a big Cashner guy, but I think I would probably start him. But, man, he's been so inconsistent this year that it's hard to say. Like, it's hard to think a San Diego pitcher could really have blow-up potential when he's at home twice next week. But I really think he does.
Well, and even in San Diego, and look, I just said I don't expect them to, but even in San Diego, look, the one thing the Mets do is hit home runs. You still, even in San Diego, wouldn't be utterly shocked if Conforto, Granderson, and Duda all took him deep in four innings. That's an entirely conceivable sequence of events.
Oh yeah, totally. And I mean, the truth is, if you don't believe in a pitcher, like even if the matchups are good, don't start him. Right. So like I said, I don't own Cashner in any leagues, but I wouldn't be like trying to get him off waivers or something to start him, even though those matchups are good. I would rather start Carnes. I would rather start Tillman, even though the matchup, especially for Tillman, with him being at home twice next week, are harder. But in most of Tillman's starts this year, he's looked pretty solid.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks for taking some time to talk. MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke, and thanks, everybody, for listening.